I'm Megan Blau. We are here to abet creation and to witness to it, to notice each other's beautiful face and complex nature, so that creation need not play to an empty house.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Patrick McVitie-Mill, and I'm a co-dean, which is like a co-president, of the youth group. Reality is described in the all-knowing Wikipedia as the state of things as they actually exist, including everything that is, whether observable, comprehensible, or apparently self-contradictory by science, philosophy, or any other system of analysis. Unfortunately for me, there wasn't an article on how to make your own, so I had to come up with the rest of this from scratch. I should have expected that, though. No one knows how to do it. You can't just go to Home Depot and buy some matter and some truth and, you know, laws of physics, L4. Go home and hammer it all together and have your own reality. There has to be some key to it, though. Some way to harness the power that makes all that is. A friend of mine, a real spacey guy, not on drugs, though, just kind of out there in the way he thinks, has a life goal of discovering the means to shift and change reality to his like it, to make it all just how he wants to be. Over the few years I've known him, he's had a few theories. My favorite two are where he planned to make a potion by mixing pure good and pure evil and then drinking it, allowing him to become God. Then he decided if he let a brain surgeon tinker with him, he'd eventually be able to change his perception of reality and make it whatever he wanted it to be. The first idea is just kind of crazy. With all the differing views of good and evil, how could he get it right? The second one is interesting, but ultimately it's flawed. There's a big difference between perceiving reality for yourself and altering it for everybody. Most people who perceive the generally accepted view of reality as being drastically different are deemed insane and separated from those who see the more accepted view. Whatever reality exists for you, it cannot be denied that the ability to change and shift the nature of it would be pretty awesome. Many people, like my friend, dream of having the power to change reality. In films like The Matrix, the accepted view is false, and only those who can defy the laws of the system can emerge and see the world as it really is. In other forms of media, certain beings actually can alter the forces of the universe, such as the comic book villain Mr. Mitza Spitlick from Superman. Mitza Spitlick hails from the fifth dimension and has unlimited power, enabling him to completely alter all aspects of the realities of our dimension. How? He says it's magic. Ah, magic. Magic seems to be the key to it. Whenever that goofball Uncle Harold came over, he'd pull a quarter from behind your ear and give it to you. But where did it come from? How did Uncle Harold conjure this quarter from nothingness behind my ear? It must be magic. The acts of magicians and illusionists defy so many laws that would normally be held to be unbreakable. It seems as if they possess some force over reality that no one else could even dream of having. Take, for example, the classic trick of pulling a rabbit out of a hat. A rabbit that was definitely not in the hat in the first place. Where did it come from? Simple. The magician used magic to create the rabbit from nothingness. This proves that he is a master of creating reality. The rabbit is quite real, not simply imagined, for it is seen by Saul. But then, did the magician change all of our realities? Is he so powerful that all of true existence lies under those white gloves, able to alter all that is and will be? Yes, that must be it. Magic, that's the way to fully harness the power to change reality. Mitza Spitlick had it right. Now, if only these tricks were not that. Tricks. If only these sleights of hands were genuine, like Mitza Spitlick's powers. Ah, magic. Magic shows up in everything. Why? Because people wish they could change the reality to something bigger and better, just like the magicians, just like Mitza Spitlick. What little kid, heck, what adult, wouldn't want to be the most powerful wizard in the wizarding world, able to do much more than take rabbits out of hats? That's why Harry Potter hit so big. It's so close to our reality, but it's different, and the readers wish that difference was present in their world. Magic. Children play pretend as much as they can. The worlds of pretend are vast and full of imagination, nothing like anyone would encounter in their daily lives. And yet they all intertwine into each other. One child knows when she has interacted with another's world. They can see and acknowledge the presence of everything in each other's pretends. It's pretty cool. Magic. When too old to play pretend, some reach for tabletop games like Dungeons & Dragons or video games like World of Warcraft. The worlds presented in these games are cooler than ours, not quite as freeform as the child's pretend, but still shared and accepted by all. When playing one of those, you're no longer Uncle Harold, quarter conjurer, working at Domino's Pizza on the side. You're Galthok the Mighty, level 45 barbarian warlord, capable of summoning much more than just coins. You create your own reality to spend some time in. Dive into this alternate space of wonder that does not normally exist. Magic. That's why we seek these outlets. Although as of now, much to the disappointment of my friend, there's nothing to actually change what we have. But through these novels and movies and games, we can simulate what it might be like if we could change our reality. A glimpse of what could be if we only had the power. If we only had it. Magic. I guess I was kind of wrong. You can come close to creating your own reality, or at least experiencing a piece of something like it. Since magic itself, the power, is far from our reach, we can seek the experience through magicians, games, movies, and even the comic books like the one Mr. and Mrs. Spitlick is in. All this may not be as complete as what my buddy wants, but it's close enough to get by. It's there, though. Magic is around us, ready to help make our realities just what we want them to be. Plenty of rabbits and hats to match. All you have to do is look around and pull the right pair of ears. My friend once turned to me at a seemingly random time, paused for a few moments, and then said to me in a soft but serious voice, "Wouldn't it be cool to be Spider-Man?" Cool indeed, friend. Cool indeed.
When I was little, I was an expert at creating my own reality. I didn't even have imaginary friends like a norm kid. Instead, I made up stories in my head, little ongoing universes that I'd think about when I didn't have anyone to play with. To this day, it's hard for me to write stories because I can't write as fast as I can think, and it gets frustrating to put background information into words instead of skipping to the part I'm interested in writing about. Nevertheless, I have made myself sit down and write some events and observations that have been important to my life so far, in the hope that it'll be something more than a self-indulgent diary entry. At the end of my last year of middle school, everyone signed each other's yearbooks with stuff like, "Keep in touch and don't ever change." Well, hardly anyone keeps in touch unless they're going to the same high school. So much for that one. And while I cried as much as any of my friends that last day, don't ever change is, in my opinion, the worst advice you could ever give anybody. Even in middle school, I changed. I learned to be a little less sensitive, to not let how other people view me occupy my every thought. In high school, I got more confident. Making friends and having fun became easier. It turns out a lot of things are easier once you remind yourself that working with someone you're not sure you'll get along with is not, in fact, the worst thing that could ever happen. Losing your sense of humor is. It's always been pathetically easy to make me laugh, but I couldn't always laugh instead of getting upset. It's harder to do, but it does make things easier to deal with. I'm still working on it. When I accidentally got the car towed, for example, that was a little difficult for me to laugh at for a while, but I am working on it. So, right now, nearing the end of my senior year of high school, I'm about to face the biggest change of all, going to college. It's a terrifying concept, but I try not to think about that too much. It's also incredibly exciting, but I try not to think about that either. I don't want to expect, I want to experience. I'm planning on going pretty far away, to Indiana University in Bloomington. I think my first few weeks there will be terrible. I'll be homesick and lonely and lost and confused, but I'll get over it. I'll make new friends. I'll learn how to take care of myself. People can get used to anything, and I want so badly for this to be a positive change in my life. My main basis for comparison on this is the first rally I ever went to with YRUU about 2 years ago. A rally is a gathering of 100 to 150 Unitarian Universalist youth from all over Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma, all at one church. We play games, eat, drink, dance, do social action, and have tons of fun over the course of one weekend. The first few hours, I sort of wandered around by myself because I was scared of all these people I didn't know. But I also didn't know how nice and friendly they all were, that I could just start talking to any group of people and make friends. A rally is an idealized environment for that sort of thing, but I've also been able to apply that experience in my ordinary life to a certain degree. Now I'm more likely to talk to someone I don't know in a new situation instead of just wondering if I should. Similarly, my trip to Georgia and Alabama the summer before last helped me a lot. I don't know why, but I was a lot more confident when I returned. Maybe it was going to museums, meeting amazing people, traveling to new places, learning about all the heroic civil rights activists who had more to worry about than their mundane day-to-day activities. Or maybe it was getting quoted in huge print in a UU magazine at the end of it. You be the judge. Of course, I went with a group of people I knew. Last summer, when I traveled to Canada to visit cousins I'd never even met, I was on my own. And when I got myself on and off the planes and through customs all by myself, it was certainly a good feeling. Now, somehow, all of this needs to relate to the topic of creating your own reality. I'm not sure all of it does. But I am a senior in YRUU this year, and when else am I going to get such a public forum to tell the church what a big part of my life it's been? I helped teach preschool for 4 years and loved it. I've gone to RE every year except this one, and that's only because I am now making your coffee. This church and the people in it have gone a long way towards creating the person I am right now. As for my reality, it's subject to change without notice.
I'm Edward Balaguer, and I'm the other co-dean. This morning, we all woke up, and in those first few minutes of being awake, we created a reality. Each person, their own reality. Some of our realities include plans to go eat lunch with friends after church. Some will go and garden. Some will go and enjoy this fresh spring weather after weeks of winter. Whatever happens, each person will do something different. Each of our own realities is unique, but on the other hand, our realities all have similarities. If each person is an island, we're an archipelago, connected by the similarities of our ideas, by the way we perceive the world around us. But what forms these realities? What came first, the chicken or the egg? Does the world around us shape what we see, or do we shape the world around us into what we want to see? Or is a little bit of both? We have many realities, some that are small and affected what we see in the moment, what we touch, what we feel, what we hear. Some are more all-encompassing, the rest of the world, knowing that there are other countries, that there are other people and other places, and some slightly in between, where you understand that there is another world around, there's a greater world around you, there's a smaller one in which you live. Each piece of information, these realities change. Maybe it's something as simple as noticing a flower just open its petals up to the sun can change your smaller reality. Maybe like a larger reality. Hearing that there was a devastating natural disaster where so many died, though you didn't know a single one. Back to that flower. If you haven't found out that flower, if you hadn't seen that flower before, how would you know it existed? Up until the moment you saw it, you didn't know that it was real. It wasn't part of your reality. And as soon as you look away, how can you be sure it still exists? You can't say for certain until you look again. It's a little bit like Schrodinger's cat. Is the cat dead? Is the cat alive? You can't say for certain until you open the box. What I've said up until now has pointed towards a reality that doesn't exist until you perceive it. We cannot live our lives like that. We are forever basing what we do on the things we don't know for certain, are mere probabilities that something will happen, something that has happened. Best example is how we think about things that have happened far from us. The wars that are fought thousands of miles from us, where so many die. The atrocities committed by cruel people, horribly twisted by fate. The natural disasters that occur, totally uncontrollable, unreal, until they affect you. These all have to fit into our realities as well. Without them, we would be ignoring a large part of the world. With this all in mind, we must balance what we take in directly and indirectly to form our realities, and to ultimately try to change them. Try to change them for the best. For this is all we can truly hope to do in life. Make the world a better place. Make it a better place for somebody else, if only by a small amount.
Hello, I'm Aaron Osmer. We don't know what we're doing, but we're doing it with spirit. I think that pretty much sums up this church's beliefs, if indeed they can be summed. This actually came about at a youth rally, when about 100 hyperactive and sleep-deprived UU youth were marching in downtown Houston in honor of Martin Luther King, Jr. We were suddenly humbled by the idea that every other group marching there had some sort of gig that they're displaying for the parade, either a band, a cheerleading group, or really any number of things having to do with talent. So we just started shouting random chants that had somewhat to do with the youth group. I think about 5 people knew the words. But in spite of this fact, we were all screaming at the top of our lungs, having a great time. So in the midst of that energetic delirium, I came up with this incredibly deep philosophy. It's just how it goes, isn't it? The purpose of this church, as I have noticed, is basically to accept the wanderers and weirdos, those who don't know what to believe or those who just can't bring themselves to. And I see their point. I'd have a hard time being a God-fearing person, too. Does anyone expect me to fear this being who's hovering above me, who's been claimed for millennia to be caring and merciful? Oh, yeah, he's great, but I want to stay out of his way when he's had a couple. But we can't dismiss anyone who thinks differently than we do. We're all trying to find stability. The criteria for being a good person is trying to live your life in the best way you can, if you follow what you honestly believe is right. By this definition, many murderers, thieves, and politicians are good people. The problem is that those in similar categories are not allowing other people to live their lives and be good people as well. So how do we define these that hinder others? Misguided? Because I can tell you that there would be a couple 100 million people that would be quick to label us as such. There's really no way to classify other people as lesser or greater than ourselves, because we're all following the same idea. We find something that we can allow ourselves to believe, and we get into it. We survive by finding something seemingly solid to rest our faith in. You can't tell me that atheistic scientists don't have faith. There's faith that what we have here, right now, is real. We all live by our faith in what we know to be true, sometimes despite ourselves. Keeping that in mind, you can tell that even if we know that we're right, even if we're sure, we still have no idea. We just have to be enthusiastic and pronounce our niche in the world. We don't know what we're doing, but we're doing it with spirit. And this idea comes into play in almost all aspects of life. It's when you have the most fun, as I mentioned with the youth rally in Houston. Similarly, when I was in 7th grade, my school choir was giving a concert. It was a very special one because it was the last concert of the year. Half the people there would be moving on to high school the next year. So this choir was about to be dismissed, and a new one would form. But the concert went on without a hitch. Then, at the end, CD played over onto the next song, which we had half learned, and it wasn't planned to be in the concert at all. So we went for it. It was horrible, and probably about the most fun I'd had in a long time. We had no clue what we were singing or why we were singing it, but at that moment, none of us knew. We're all bonded through our mutual cluelessness and blindness. So here's my reaction to anyone who says, I have the answer. You have an answer. It may be brilliant, but it's no better or worse than anything else. So follow it as law, but keep in mind that it's not the only possibility. The truth is, we don't know all of the possibilities, and therefore, we can't even say which one we think is most accurate. Our entire lives are spent by following what we think is right at the time. It's all about perspective. Now, it may seem a little paradoxical for me to be preaching this, but by no means must you take it as anything more than my outlook of the human race. If you found the answer, that's wonderful. It'll serve its purpose. But as they say, there's more than one way to skin a cat. By the way, please do not take a pair of scissors to Fluffy. Then he couldn't find his own answer. That being said, what forms our realities and what we think we're doing is everything we've gained in the time up to this point. You cannot exclude or foresee anything. You can only know what you think you were doing in the past and what you think you're doing now. So look to the future, remember the past, but live in this minute. It's cliche, but it's the only chance you have to figure things out.